the truth of conversion is seen in a life that's different. Whether Christ is in you, or whether you're a stranger to Christ, we'll see it in your life. Paul told the Ephesians that they had come from darkness into light, from death into life, that they had now become the children of God when they were strangers. And in this part of the letter, he's telling them how such people should live. How the children of God must live to please their Father. Now, it's not really teaching for unsaved people, because those people don't have that power. They don't have that spirit inside them. They're not in the light. The first thing they need to do is to go to the cross of Christ for forgiveness and new life. But now he's telling the people who are new people how those people should live. And this part of the letter is all about recognizing authority. Chapter 5, verse 21, he said, "Submit to one another out of reverence or respect for Christ." So you see, there's been quite a lot of teaching about how to relate to different authorities in the family, in the home, now outside of the home, or rather in a slave-master relationship, not a family relationship. Now, the world tells young people, especially, tells them that it's good to do your own thing, be your own person, answer to nobody. Well, that's not the Christian way. The Christian way is to see what different authorities there are in the world and to honour them properly. And the one we have here is slaves and masters, he talks about. So first, we should talk a bit about that, about the people that Paul was writing to, the situation that he was writing to, because they were slaves. He was in the Roman Empire. Ephesus was part of the Roman Empire, and they had slavery there. Now, there's been different kinds of slavery in the world. Perhaps when we think of slavery, we think most of all of man-stealing. We think of people being stolen away from their country, put on a ship, taken over to a colony, and forced to work until they die, if they don't die on the way, on the journey. And of course, that kind of slavery is very wicked. The Old Testament had a different kind of slavery. Even in the law of God, there was a kind of slavery. Oh, if an Israelite couldn't pay his debts, if he was ruined, then they didn't throw him into prison. But that man could sell himself for a time. And there was a limit on the time. It was a maximum of 7 years. And in that time, by giving his labour as a slave, he could redeem himself. He could pay off his debt again. And he could be restored. He could come back into the society. And the law of God had different rules to protect the rights of that slave, so he couldn't be exploited. Because he was still an Israelite. He was still a brother. He hadn't become like a dog. He was still a man. Now, the slavery in the Roman Empire was a cruel slavery. The laws were harsh and hard. It gave the owner all the rights, and the slave had none of the rights. He was just property. Even the owner could put him to death, and there was no law to prevent him. It wasn't murder, because you're allowed, they said, you're allowed to destroy your own property. So if you own a slave, and if he's a useless slave, then just destroy him. And so, of course, that was completely against the law of God. Now, truly, no man can own another man, because we're all made in the image of God. We're all brethren in that way. We're not animals, but we're equals. But when Paul spoke to these slaves, he didn't say, rise up. He didn't say, let's have a revolution. He didn't tell them to fight against their employers or their owners until they got freedom. And that's not the Christian way. If Paul had said that, what would have happened? There would have been a lot of blood. There would have been a lot of dead bodies. And there wouldn't have been freedom. The owners would have become even harder, even harsher. The Christians would have gained more persecution. They would have said, these Christians, they just preach revolution. They preach the overthrowing of society. And all that would have happened would be the Christian slaves would have suffered more and more. Maybe you've heard of Martin Luther, one of the reformers in the Protestant Reformation around 500 years ago. And he was a man who began to preach the way of salvation accurately again after many years of darkness. And many of the peasants, many of the poor people began to believe and to follow him. And there was the temptation to encourage those peasants, they were called, not really called slaves, peasants, but they were down low, to tell them to rise up. And there were many people saying that. And Luther, he failed to discourage them. He failed to say, no, we're not preaching revolution. And the result was there was a lot of blood that was shed. And he was very sorry for it afterwards. Now, Paul had a different way. God had shown him a different way. Masters and slaves, they existed. And there was a kind of slavery in the Old Testament. And what Paul did was taught them how to live in that situation. How to please God in that situation. And then to wait for God to bring the change. And Paul actually taught them to sow the seeds that would lead to freedom. He taught Christian masters and Christian slaves a new way of relating to each other. And the end of that way would be the end of slavery. But it wasn't through political revolution. It wasn't through violence. But it was through trusting God, sowing the seeds. And we'll see what that means. But he taught them in their place to please God in that place. Not to think today of getting rid of it, but how to serve God in that place. There's lots of situations we find ourselves in, and they're not good situations. And we wish they were different. And we'd like to change them today, but we don't have the power. But the gospel tells us we can glorify God in that situation. Even if you're a slave, even if you have an owner who can kill you, then you can bring glory to God. You can please Christ in that situation. And that's very good news. Paul didn't say, well, you slaves, sorry, there's nothing for you. You just have to put up with it. No, he taught them that they could please Christ. So those are the people he wrote to. Now in verse 5, we see what he told the slaves to do. Slaves, obey your earthly masters with respect and fear, with sincerity of heart, just as you would obey Christ. Their duty was obedience. How much obedience? Complete obedience. Just as you would obey Christ. Obey your master as if he were God, with that kind of authority. Verse 6, when should you obey? You should obey all the time. Not just to win favor when their eye is on you. Oh, the master's watching. Let me work hard. He'll think I'm one of the best slaves. I'll improve my wages. I'll get better food. I'll not get beaten. Oh, the master's gone away now. He's not watching. Let me just lie down and rest. No. Just as the eye of Christ is always on you, said Paul. So serve at all times. Now there's no slaves among us. But we have employees. People whose time has been purchased. That someone else, an employer, has bought your time from you. And now it's his. And during that time, the same teaching surely applies. Do what they give you to do with that time, but do it with your whole heart. even as if it were Christ himself. Now, many of these slaves could say, but my master is cruel. They could say, but he pays me so very little. They could say, the food he gives me is too little. But Paul says, well, that's not for you to worry about when deciding about your labor. But because you're a slave, it's your duty to give your labor, even as it's his duty to pay you and to feed you and to take care of you. So it's your duty to give your labor. See, the Christian teaching is always, you look at your duty. Even, we're very sorry that other people don't do their duty, but we must do our duty. What God has given us, we must do for the glory of Christ. And if someone is not doing their duty to us, then we'll pray for them. But we'll show them a better way. But we can't make it an excuse. We can't say, well, I won't do my duty because he's not doing his. That's not the way of Christ. You're still responsible for what you do. Now, why they were to do it? What were the motives? Well, Paul says, your true master is Christ. He says, as you would obey Christ. Verse 6, like slaves of Christ. Verse 7, as if you're serving the Lord. Because, verse 8, the Lord will reward. No man can truly own another man. Even if the law says so, even if men in their parliaments make you to be owned by someone else, our true owner is Christ, because he purchased us by his blood shed on the cross. He paid the whole price, and he really does own us. And he's the one who watches us, he's the one who will reward us, or who will discipline us. And so the slave should say, now who really am I serving? Is it that cruel master over in the house? No, I'm serving a loving and good master up in heaven. And he's watching me and he'll reward me. And so I'll do my very best for him. And Paul does say, he is the one who will reward you, verse 8. For whatever good he does, everyone, whether slave, whether free, Christ will give the reward. And you can't say, well, I'm just low in this position. I can do nothing. It's worthless. It's a waste of time. So what's the point? No, you can't say that. Christ knows your opportunities. And Christ will reward you for using those opportunities. Another man has different opportunities. Well, that's between him and Christ. But you have your opportunities. You use those and try to please Christ with them. Christ himself came as a servant. He came to serve his Father's will, even to the death of the cross, even to shed his blood. Christ has shown us the way. The path he was given was very hard, was very painful, and yet he walks it to the end. And by that he saved us. And this teaching is very liberating. It's very encouraging. Wherever you are, Christ values your service. Whether your situation, whether your boss at work, even if he's a terrible person, yet Christ is the one you can truly serve, and he'll reward you for it. And so even the work of a Roman slave had great dignity, and it was very important. And so an apostle of God could write to Roman slaves and tell them that they needed to be careful in their work, because it was important to Christ. We're all free, men and women. How much more is it important for us to use our greater opportunity than those people had? If even slaves had an apostle tell them, how much more does our work have dignity and importance to the Son of God? Well, Paul goes from the slaves to the masters. And that's in verse 9. Masters, treat your slaves in the same way. Do not threaten them, since you know that he who is both their master and yours is in heaven. There is no favoritism with him. The law of God is always very simple to understand. It just says, love your neighbour as yourself. If your neighbour and you, if you changed your positions, what would you want from him? What would you be expecting the duty from him? So, masters, treat your slaves in the same way. That is, remembering the Lord. Remembering to do good to them. Remembering to give them what they deserve from you. Remember to give them what is right in the sight of God. They're to be treated as brothers. Do the same things as them. They're human beings. They're made in the image of God. How much more also a Christian slave, redeemed by the blood of Christ, just as you are. So that meant they should give them fair wages for their work. That they shouldn't make them to go hungry. That they shouldn't leave them that they have nothing left over after their needs have been supplied. The slavery in the Old Testament. A slave was allowed to buy himself out of his position. He could redeem himself. Now how could he do that? Because of course the master was expected to pay him fairly. So that he could eat his food. So that he could get his medicine, whatever else he needed. And then he could put something away to save. And the day would come when he could buy his freedom. It's a cruel and it's a wicked employer who only pays his employees what they can eat and pay their rent with, and after that they have nothing. Human beings are not to be flogged like horses until they fall down. They're to be cared for. If you ever become someone who employs someone else, give them their Sabbath rest. Give them the Lord's day. So that they're not working, working, working. Give them their own life. So that they're not almost like a slave. And Paul gives something in particular. He says, do not threaten them. Don't abuse them. Don't be telling them what you'll do to them. Don't take advantage. Don't exploit them. It's all part of not treating them unfairly. Christ was once a servant, and he still is a servant. He serves his people. So the position of a servant has great dignity. Christ has walked there. We mustn't despise it. When you find you have a position where you're responsible for someone, don't exploit them. Now Paul gives them a motivation too. He gives them a reason. He says, you know, the gospel teaches you this, you know, that he who is both their master and yours is in heaven. And there is no favoritism with him. See what Paul does here. He puts slaves and masters in the same place. All slaves are actually free men. Christ has made them free. See in verse 5, it said, slaves, obey your earthly masters. Or another translation, your masters in the flesh. But spiritually, the Christian slave was free. He answered only to Christ for his soul. And his time of slavery on earth here, it was limited. It was just for a time. Truly, the slave was a free man, as we all are before Christ. But the master is also a slave. He's a servant of Christ. He belongs to him. He's purchased. Every believer is a slave of Christ. So as Paul speaks to Christian owners and Christian slaves in Ephesus, he's bringing them to the same place, that they're brothers. And Christ will judge the master as well as the slave. How do you want Christ to treat you? Well, that's how you must treat other people. What do you want Christ to do to you? Because you serve him badly, I serve him badly, we all serve him badly. We haven't been good servants of Christ. How do we want him now to treat us? Well, you treat other people in the same way. Christ's judgment is right. He says there's no favouritism. He doesn't say, well, you're rich, you're important, you're famous in this world, so you can just go your own way. But you, you're a slave, so I'm going to be strict with you. That's a worldly way of doing things. But Christ doesn't do things that way. He judges according to truth, not according to who you are. Now, in this way, the gospel, it went under the foundations of slavery and started to bring them down. When it taught masters to look at their slaves as brothers in the Lord, when it taught masters to look at themselves as slaves, when it taught masters to see their slaves as free spiritually, it started to loosen the bonds, to loosen the chains of slavery. A Christian owner could not look at his slave anymore like a possession, just to throw around as he wanted. He had to look at him as a brother, equal with him in the gospel. And that's how we fight against unrighteousness. Whether it's in the workplace, whether it's in society, in culture, Christians overcome evil with good. We don't fight evil with more evil, but we fight it with good. And it sounds very surprising. You say, oh, it's going to be too weak. It's not going to work. You know, we need some stronger weapons. These people are fighting with fire, so let us fight with fire. But Paul was right. This was how slavery was dealt with in the Roman Empire. Over the years, slaves and masters began to look at each other as brothers. So the masters began to say, well, I can't really have you as a slave. You're my brother. You just go free and just be my employee. It loosened gradually, not with violence that would have resulted in blood, but we meet violence with kindness. We meet unfaithfulness with purity. We overcome hatred with love. We believe in the power of Jesus Christ. He will overcome. He will win.